You're listening to the Nate Lowell Podcast. Download each new episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. And now, here's Nate.
Hey, everybody. A new episode today here on the Nate Lowell Podcast. I am your host, Nate Lowell. And today we are calling this one the 2024 Girls Basketball Wrap-Up Episode as we welcome back our good friend Jeff Maliner from Empire State Takeover. He was headed down 88 to Binghamton for the Stars and Stripes tournament, so I said, hey, stop by the studio and we can kind of recap everything from the not only the Section 4 and the local season, but Jeff travels all over New York State and the Northeast, so it's always fun to get some new stories from him. So we will talk about the great run by the Moravia girls to win a Class C state championship. I thought that was just an awesome story. And we'll talk about the Cherry Valley Springfield girls and their run to the state Final Four. And as I said, Jeff sees so much basketball that he always has new stories to drop on us. So always good to have Jeff back in the studio. This will be a fun one here today. Okay, before we get started, I have to thank all our special sponsors here on the Nate Lowell Podcast. They make it possible. They include Covered Bridge Farm Market in Unadilla, Charles J. Houston Incorporated of Mount Upton, JM Electrical Contracting of Bainbridge, the NBT Insurance Agency. We have Advantage Maytag Home Appliance Center in Oneonta, Springbrook. We have NYCM Insurance of Edmiston, Sportsfield Specialties of Delhi, the Curley Wealth Management Group of Oneonta, the Delaware National Bank of Delhi, Preferred Mutual Insurance Company of New Berlin. We have Stewart's Shops, Clark Sports Center of Cooperstown, and Certified Auto Outlet of Oneonta. All right, this is our girls basketball wrap-up today with Jeff Maliner. Thanks for checking back, folks, to the Nate Lowell Podcast. All right. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nate Lowell Podcast. We are not giving today a number. We're just calling it the 2024 Girls Basketball Wrap-Up here. So, of course, I'm Nate Lowell, and we're joined by our good friend. Anytime he's passing through on the I-88 corridor, as they call it, we try to have him in. So he's heading to Stars and Stripes tonight. Jeff Maliner from Empire State Takeover is here. Sir, thanks for coming back.
As always, happy to be here for the first time, not bound by the constraint of a number. So,
yeah, no, this is your first special episode. I guess we always say the ones without numbers are maybe a little extra special, but I want to just be able to record this and get it out as quick as we can. And yeah, we got a lot to talk about here with the end of the season. I just thought it was a perfect opportunity to kind of look back on things, not only locally, but Section 4 and statewide. I don't think people realize how crazy you are. And we've talked about it on here before, but you and I will always be texting late at night when you are traveling across wherever, the state, the world, etc. But tell us recently your Buffalo trip. That one to me, when you said what you were doing, I was like, man, that's a tough one.
Yeah, we're on West Coast hours. I appreciate that when you know it's going to be a late night, you're like, hey, if you need someone to get a hold of, I'll be up late.
Yeah, you know, I'm here.
You know, one in the morning. I've had a couple interesting ones going out towards Western New York over the last two or three weeks. You're probably talking about the one that just happened right after high school season.
Yes.
On the Wednesday. A couple of weeks before that, I kind of had a fun one too, where it was also driving through snow on the way back, but I was in Rochester on Friday, Saturday for the regional week. So I went there for Far West Regionals, and because I'm an idiot, decided I've never done Long Island Championships before. The Long Island Championships are usually on a Saturday, but they're on Sunday this year for all the A's, A, double A, triple A. I'm like, how about I do that too? So I was in Canandaigua, Finger Lakes Community College, through Saturday night, drove back. It was low mid-40s when I left. by the time I got to the place where it always snows on the thruway, in between exit 30 and 29 at Herkimer Little Falls, where you go off the mountain.
Yes.
You know, there was an inch and a half, a good inch and a half, 2 inches of snow on the ground by the time you got to the top of the hill, and no plow, no nothing in sight, just because it was low 40s at the bottom, so why would you worry about up top? So that was fun with that little stretch of land getting back home, then, you know, just to get back at 1 a.m. and turn around and go to Long Island 7 hours later,
yeah,
to meet you down there.
I was
Cherry
say,
Valley was there.
I saw you, and that game tipped at 10 a.m. and you were there
halftime.
I was going to say halftime. So, yeah, and that's a quick turnaround.
Yeah, and then then this past week was day trip. You know, that's something at home. I've learned to pick my battles, and one battle I don't pick anymore is midweek overnights for the most part.
Yeah.
So if I'm on the road, no matter how far it is, if it's a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, yep, I'll be back home. I'm not staying over. And that was Wednesday in Buffalo. So
Albany. So you're based in Albany.
Yes.
Albany, Buffalo, and back.
Yep. And snow on the way there, squalls. And it wasn't just one squall. It was probably 5 or 6 on the way out there. But at that point, it wasn't sticking. It was just whatever. You're clear for 20, 30 minutes, and then you have low visibility for 3 to 5, and then you're good for another half hour. Wasn't sticking. Fine. We're good. It was sticking on the way back home. And that was pretty much on and off all the way across the state. Lost maybe probably a good hour. And for the snow, you know, for what the weather was, I made, and the fact that I drive a Corolla, I made pretty good time. But, you know, it was still a 2:59 a.m. return to the driveway.
You and I are in the same boat where we both drive the little great on gas car because we are on the road so much. And those are the nights where it's like, well, it'd be nice to maybe have something a little bigger or four-wheel drive or whatever. But to me, I'm just like, put good tires on the car and we're going to just go slow and hope for the best.
Yes. So. Yes. Fuel economy and longevity.
Yes.
And everything. I'll sacrifice the leg room. I'll sacrifice, you know, the four-wheel drive, whatever.
Yeah.
You put $50,000 a year on the car. Yeah, you want one that's going to last more than 100 or 150,000 miles if you treat it right.
I know we've said it before. Yeah, like people think I drive a lot. You're driving triple that. So that's a ton every year.
I've gotten to the habit of got 2 trip meters on the car. One I'll reset when I get in the car every Monday. So it's just a weekly trip meter. The other one I'll reset every day. The state championship week where everything's at Hudson Valley, which is all of 11 miles for me, 11 yeah. or 12, you know, it's a relative stone's throw, probably about 20 minutes. That week was the first week that I drove under 1,000 miles since the first week of November, first or second week of November. You know, every week from that point on, by the time I hit that reset button Monday morning, was over 1,000. Usually it was, the sweet spot was somewhere between 12 and 15.
I'm so glad that States is in your backyard because I feel like you deserve it because you drive all over the place all year to see all these players and coaches and communities, and now they have to come to you. And it feels like the right thing. Like, all right, well, now we're going to go play in Jeff's backyard.
It has absolutely nothing to do with me, yet at the same time, it feels so rewarding.
Exactly.
All right, I drive around all the time. Now you come to me.
So I was there on Saturday at States and sat with you for a little while before we headed up to do our broadcast, and it might have been the most jovial I've seen you in a long time. And it felt, to me, thinking back on it, it feels like all your people were there in one place, and that has to be kind of cool for you. Because you were just like loving the games, loving the music. I mean, you know everybody from the refs to the players to the coaches to the guys working the tables to the MC. That's got to be kind of fun.
It is. There might have been a little part of that is when you get to that point of too overtired,
yeah,
you just kind of filter's gone.
Yes.
Here we go. I always say that during AAU tournaments. You want the most, for better or worse, the most real version of me? Catch me on a Saturday night during a live period where it's numerous days in a row after like 6:30 p.m. You'll get a little less contained version of me than you will maybe at the beginning. But yeah, I mean, that's you between the teams that you've watched. You know, there's 24 teams that made it to Hudson Valley. I saw 22 of them in person this year.
Wow, that's amazing.
And really the only one that, and one of them that I didn't see in person before that was Albertus Magnus, who I have a lot of familiarity with anyways. It just so happened the way it worked on the schedule, I didn't get to catch them this winter before they got to Hudson Valley.
Right.
You know, when there's that level of familiarity with the teams, the players, in turn, the families too, you know, with some of them, with some of the coaches and, like you say, the officials and all of the Section 2 stuff is at Hudson Valley as well. So, you know, it's a lot of the same people, whether it's Brian Cady on the mic.
Yeah.
Or I think, you know, the D finals they had Stefano Gazzelli.
Mm.
He had the AAA semis right before the D semifinals.
And the energy.
On Sundays. Yeah. But yeah, you know, there's a... I guess, yeah, my people, you know, but it's women's basketball, right? You know, it's you look around, it's a lot of people, you know, going into unfamiliar gyms all the time. And like, that feels like second home.
Yeah. Yeah. You're there a lot, especially at the end of the year with, like you said, the Section 2 finals and then having all the states there. And, you know, the talk down here to transition a little bit is Moravia. I mean, and we'll get into CVS. They're kind of more of my local team, but they make Section 4 history. Boys and girls win states for Moravia. First time we've had a Section 4 basketball team do that in the history of the section. Moravia boys won one, I think it was 2018, 2017, somewhere in there. Great program. Todd does a great job with them. But this girls one to me, and I think to a lot of people that I talked to, was a bit of a surprise. And, you know, they were a 3 seed in sectionals, and they get out, and it's like, okay, let's see what they can do in states. And they go all the way, beating a very, very good Duanesburg team in the final. I want to pick your brain. I want your thoughts on their run and that matchup with Duanesburg.
It's funny that you brought up Moravia being title town with both the boys and girls, because I knew it. But I didn't really think about it in the moment right after they beat Duanesburg.
Sure.
It didn't hit me until later that night, because game's over. And if you've seen one, you've pretty much seen them all as far as the post-game celebrations, you know, how it works at Hudson Valley, where you've got all the families and the fans and supporters that are hanging out in the lobby or whatever, you know, waiting for the players to come out. Usually, and it's usually about the same sort of time frame. It takes 10 to 15 minutes after the post-game celebrations and awarding of the medals and all of that. And then the players come out and, yay, all the cheers and all the pictures and everything. And they're all just, you know, kind of hanging out for another 15, 20 minutes before they start to clear out. I was going to work my way over there. I know the Duanesburg people very well, so I was just trying to, you know, just see them first. Like the teams that lose are the ones that I always try to spend a little more time with. You know, it's not that I'm neglecting winners, but, you know, the teams that lose, I'm always trying to, even if it's go out of my way to make sure, you know, if I know somebody over there, just kind of catch up with them, but, or support them, whatever it may be. But I wait a few minutes and I go out there, and it's just Duanesburg people. There's no Moravia people there.
Mm.
Why? They already left. They'd go up to Glens Falls.
Yeah.
It was like, we won. Yay, let's go up to Glens Falls.
Let's get out of here.
And I saw like 2 people in blue shirts left. And everybody else was purple. I've never seen a team clear out so quickly after winning a state championship. Usually they want to sit there and just let that moment sink in. They were gone. They were probably on the north way at that point. But that's because title town.
Yeah.
Right? They had to go up and
support the boys.
And the boys played later that night, I think. And
I'm trying to remember. Yeah. And I'm sure they had a huge celebration once they got up there. But that, and that's always a tough thing. You've seen it before where a school will have boys and girls in it, and you're hoping the times work out for the fans and the parents. And yeah, they probably hightailed it right out of there.
Mm-hmm. So, you get to deal with that.
I do. Every year when the brackets come out, I'm like, please, please, please. And there was a chance this year if we had had our boys team, if the SK boys had gone to Glens Falls and say Cherry Valley made the final, would have overlapped. And mm-hmm. I would have been in real trouble because then it's like, well, what do you choose? Because either way, a team is in the state championship. You followed them all year and then you pick the other game to go to. And so I just feel like there's no winning.
Yeah, it puts you in a position, even if you hope that everyone would understand, there's always a couple.
There's always a couple
idiots. Back to Moravia to talk about that actual team, because I just remarked on their lack of a celebration in the lobby or maybe a muted, very quick one. But yeah, it was a heck of a run from them. And it's funny because not entirely, but to a certain extent, it almost mirrored what happened with Waterloo out of Section 5 last year in Class B. So, quick aside, end of January, 2023, Waterloo dominates Section 5, their Finger Lakes League, whatever. It's late in the regular season. Friday night, I happen to go to the game at Palmyra Macedon, which is their, a big rival, probably second best team in that league at that time. And it was the last Section 5 team to beat Waterloo a couple of years prior. Waterloo beat them by 15-20 the first time around. Palmac beats them. First time Waterloo had lost in a couple of years. It was late in the regular season. I've mentioned this in writings and whatnot. I'm not on this podcast because it's Waterloo. Nobody's really. But they didn't handle it well. I'll never forget this, walking out of the gym. There's technicals being handed out. There's fans getting tossed. There's kids that are, it's a rivalry and it's heated and they're not used to losing. Palmac played really well and got them. And it was just a moment that they didn't handle it well. Like kids walking out to the locker room after the game without going through the obligatory good game lines, and other kids going through the lines of the players, seeing the coaches turn around and not shaking the coach's hand and bursting back to the locker room. And I remember walking out of the gym thinking, this is the make or break point of the season. Because the previous year they had made it to the state finals in Class B, lost to Chalmont.
Right.
And I remember that. I'm like, they could take this and channel it and whoop everybody the rest of the year. And we could see a better version of Waterloo than we've seen to this point. Or they could collapse. Because this isn't just a Friday night, late January loss. This was different. Everything about this was different. And they channeled it, and they got Palmac again in the championship. Close game at half. Went on like a 25-0 run in the second half, 27-0, something massive.
Sheesh.
And ended up kind of running them out of the gym. And they did a lot of the same the rest of the way. Depew dominated them in the second half. Cortland dominated them in the second half. Putnam Valley held them off in the third quarter. They dominated them in the fourth quarter. They win the states and they blow through the Federation. I was there. It wasn't the same sort of visceral by any stretch. It wasn't the same sort of visceral post-game reaction. But I was in the gym when Marathon beat Moravia this year.
I forgot about that.
Just a couple days after Moravia beat Marathon by 20+.
Right.
And then this is nothing against Marathon. They got a couple nice players. And it was at Marathon. They shouldn't beat Moravia.
No.
Like that's one of those that you see teams, it's high school girls basketball, bet on it if you want to lose all your money. But you see certain games where it's like, hey, that just can't happen. That loss just can't happen. And that's probably one that, for Moravia, that's like, you just beat them by 22 hours ago, pretty much. That can't happen. And they were relatively, they're disconnected on the defensive end. They did a really poor job defending the three-point line. They hit enough shots to keep it you know, to be there to the finish. But, you know, it wasn't that, I don't want to compare it in the sense of that sort of post-game reaction, but it was that same sort of like, this is a late January loss in the regular season. This can't happen.
This can't happen.
How do you respond to it? Do you let that turn into two losses, three losses, a lull of play for a couple weeks? Or do you say, that ain't happening again? And I feel like after that point, things really started to click for that group. They beat Union Springs, low scoring. They had beat them the first time around, but it was more competitive. Second time around was a low scoring game, but they had pretty much controlled play. And by the time they got to early March, I felt like they figured out what it took to score the ball enough to win these games, because they were winning games, but they were low scoring enough that, you know, like when they beat Springs, it was 35-26.
Yes.
You get to March, you're not going to win a game of 35 points
right
in New York with a shot clock.
Yeah,
you just won't do it.
Yep.
You won't beat Dwayne'sburg with 35. You won't beat Watkins Glen with 35. You won't beat Hamilton with 50. You
right, know, right.
So
yeah,
they figured
the Hamilton thing too. We'll get there, but man, just some huge wins by this team.
And they won it in different ways, which I think is another thing that's key in March. A big thing for them the whole year, and I think they kind of put the pieces together later in the year, is they're deeper than everybody else in C as far as capable contributors. And, you know, unfortunately, I think that's what got the MAC this year with the MAC teams as far as not how many players you have on your roster or how many functional athletes you have, how many players can contribute to winning basketball games on a consistent basis. And, you know, at the Class C level, if you have five, you might win a state title.
Yeah.
Like, if you can put five players on the court where nobody is a liability, you might win a state title. Moravia has six. Nobody had six in the state. You know, Dwayne'sburg was in more of like a 3-4, 4 player sort of range.
Yep. Yep.
And when you're talking about MAC teams and whether it was just the makeup of the team to begin with, or I know there was a couple instances, like you could say, well, Delhi, they got banged up over the course of the year.
Right.
You know, that number was lower.
Yeah, two or three.
Right. Your depth of truly capable contributors. And Moravia had six, and they weren't all the same type of kid. You had guards like, you know, you had your tough physical athletic guards like an Olivia Jensen or Jesselyn Jones, who also could both shoot it well enough. You had two forwards, and they kill you in different ways with Jordan Smith and Caroline Wasileski. And I felt like the biggest, it just so happened the way that it worked out the last couple of weeks, that was their real difference. Their real difference was their front court. Their front court was able to take advantage of the last opponents that they saw, and they found their front court, where when they played Watkins Glen, it was a big Jordan Smith game. Watkins Glen is big, you know, 6'2", 6', but Jordan Smith at 5'10 is long and more mobile, and she can stretch the defense a little bit. She, if you play zone, she can be a high post, short corner sort of kid facing up 12 to 15 feet away. They found Jordan Smith in that game. Hamilton, they found Caroline Wasileski. And then it was a lot of, you know, kind of back and forth between Jordan and Caroline against the Tuckahoe team that is
really good.
Yep. You know, young team, exciting brand of basketball, but they are small. You know, if you can handle that pace and you can handle that pressure, you can get them on the back line if you have functional size.
Right.
That's how you get Dwayne'sburg too. You know, Dwayne'sburg's guard play is electric, but they defend very well in the half court. They contain the ball. They keep the dribble out of the paint. But if you can get them on the block, that's where they have some trouble. So, you know, it was a lot of Jordan and Caroline really helped in the last couple of weeks. And obviously, defense travels. They defend all year.
Right.
And that carried through to mid-March. You hold Dwayne'sburg in the mid-40s, you're doing a good job.
Yeah.
I thought they did a good job of making the last three quarters of that particular game their style.
I think what I was hearing from the casual fan here was going into the championship game. You're playing Duanesburg, and I feel like around here, especially Duanesburg, has a lot of love because they come down to the Delhi tournament quite often. We've seen great players go through their program. I know they have two Division I committed guards right now, or players, I should say. And so I think around here, there's this thought of like, I literally hear it all the time, which is kind of interesting. Like, I want to get up and see Duanesburg play. I hear that they're great. And so I think in our area, people just assumed this is Duanesburg by 20. And then to see it come down that Moravia knocked him off, I really think some jaws hit the floor around here in Section 4 country. And it was great. For us to come home with a state title, when I say us, I mean Section 4. Like, it's awesome. We haven't had one, I think it was since 2018 when Delhi and Sus Valley got it done. So mm-hmm. It was great to see. But I think it was a shocker for people here.
Basketball's a game of matchups.
Yeah.
And Duanesburg is a great team. But at the end of the day, basketball's a game of matchups. And that Jordan and Caroline, that front court, if Moravia was able to make it so they didn't turn the ball over, if they were able to make it so, you know, if they were able to limit the amount of possessions in that game, that's where you can take advantage of those kids. And obviously, I don't want to diminish anything from the guard. Like, Olivia Jensen has turned into one of my favorite small school kids in upstate New York.
Oh, she's great.
You know, just as a player. And you need those sorts of players to be able to, you need guards to be able to win March basketball games. But part of the strength of their guards in the last couple of weeks was they found the front court.
Yeah.
And they were able to get the ball where it needed to be, when it needed to be there. And the, you know, Jordan, Caroline, and so on. And, you know, they took advantage of, I thought, a series of advantageous matchups for them in the last couple of weeks.
That's so cool. And before we transition to Cherry Valley, just, you know, big shout out to Moravia and to Olivia Jensen. She has been a favorite of mine from afar for a while because they came over and played Delhi a few years ago in sectionals. I did the game on the air. I think she was in ninth grade maybe at the time, maybe 10th. And I remember thinking, boy, that's a good young player. You know, it's exciting. We'll kind of keep an eye on her. And then I kept seeing her name during cross-country season, and she's doing really, really well. And then I see on her Instagram last summer that she ran a marathon, which is like right up my alley, but extremely rare to see a high school student run a marathon. You're not at that point in your life yet. You're not thinking about running a marathon. Most kids don't want to run the mile in gym class, right? So just to see the amount of work that she puts in at all her sports is cool. Now I'm like, if she does go and do something in the next level, will it be running? Will it be basketball? Will it be both? I don't know, but it sounds like her game, basketball-wise, has continued to grow. I haven't seen her in a while.
She plays basketball like the sort of person you would have expected to run a marathon in high school.
Right. You know,
there's a level, I don't even mean that from the sense of zipping around the floor
right.
everywhere, but there's a, you are the runner of us, you know, between the two of us. There's a level of intestinal fortitude.
Yes.
You know, mental toughness that comes with that. There are more... The mental barriers are just as severe, if not even more severe at times, than the physical barriers of that sort of a feat. She plays like that's something that she's used to.
Mm.
You know, that, and she's somebody that when you get, we'll probably get into this in some different examples in the next few minutes. But when you get to that point, obviously it was Moravia's first time there on the girls' side.
Right,
you know,
right.
I don't think they'd never won a Section 4 title before this year for girls basketball.
I believe that's correct, yeah.
And there's always the thought of experience of getting to that point or just your basketball experience in general. All right, you made it to Hudson Valley Community College and playing in the state tournament, especially for small schools, small towns, that tend to put a little more emphasis on scholastic athletics, the brightness of the lights, so to speak.
Definitely.
The moment.
Definitely.
And that's not somebody that I would look at, and just the way that she plays in general, the way she carries herself and goes about her business, that's not somebody that I would look at and say, I'm nervous about how she handles this.
Yeah.
You know, I figured, hey, she'll be fine. She'll, you know, there's certain people you look at and you just, even if they've never been there, even if she's not somebody that's, you know, we'll, I'm sorry, I'm kind of getting ahead here, but
no,
we're going to talk about Ava Howie in a few minutes.
Yes.
We're class D. We're not going to be able to avoid the talk of Ava Howie. You know, that's somebody that, even if this wasn't Hammond's first go around, she's played enough basketball. She's been in enough environments. She's done the big, you know, she started to do the bigger AAU stuff where she's used to big environments. She's used to playing on a court with a whole bunch of people around, you know, a 75-court environment. She's used to playing on a court that, you know, it's in a convention center with no wall behind the basket. All these sorts of, you know, like cavernous sort of environments. Olivia Jensen's not somebody that I look at from an AAU standpoint. You know, not only have they not got to that point at Hudson Valley, but, you know, from an AAU, she's not like an AAU kid.
No.
That does all that stuff, because you can make up for that experience in other ways. But just the way that she carries herself, like, nah, she's not somebody that I would worry about the moment being too big for her.
Yeah, that's when I saw she ran her marathon, I noticed it was in New York City. And as a country kid, I don't think you just go down to New York City and say, oh, I'm just going to do this race. Like, it takes planning, and you can't be afraid to go and jump into a big event like that. And there's a lot of planning. And yeah, I kudos to Moravia, because that is, it's so hard, I think, especially for small school kids to just kind of keep their heads when mm-hmm. they get that far. So, and that brings us to Cherry Valley Springfield, the team that gets there. Doesn't win it, but I think far exceeded their expectations for the year, especially after a really slow start, kind of a Jolene Lusk hangover, whatever you want to call it. Like, they had to figure out life without Joe, and would love your thoughts on that. But when I saw them make the trip to the island and get the win, I thought that was going to be really big for their confidence going up to Hudson Valley. Like, hey, we can take a long trip and an overnight and figure this out. So, but just a really nice year for Cherry Valley. I know you got to see him a few times, and you did see him on Long Island. But yeah, just kind of a, I don't want to say I was surprised, because they would have been my pick to win the section coming in. But I remember talking with you that first night. It was, you know, you and I were kind of texting back and forth when they had that first league loss to Edmiston Morris, and I was like, mm-hmm. kind of scratching my head, like, oh, maybe I'm way off here. So.
Yeah, I've learned to not overreact to things that I see in November or early mid December. It is a long season. I hate to be cliche, but it is a marathon of a season.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they played a bunch of games at the beginning of the year. They played those four, you know, two tournaments, and one of them was they played Skenevis. It was a competitive game, and the other three were just blowouts.
Yeah,
it is what it is. And I saw them, it was their fifth game of the year already, and it was, you know, November wasn't even over yet.
It was crazy. Yeah,
I'm with you as far as player for player, tail of the tape. You look at the rosters, you think about matchups, you kind of take everything in a pot, or you take everything and throw it in a pot. Before the season, I would have said, all right, if you put a gun to my head and tell me I need to make a pick here as far as Class D in Section 4, I'm going to say Cherry Valley. But when you lose at home 34-22 to Edmiston Morris, it's like, all right, well, you just played, how I just said a few minutes ago, guards win games in March. When you play against a team with guards, which that's what Edmiston Morris has, is guards and guards and more guards, and you can only manufacture 22 points. I know it was a bad day and it's late November, but yeah, that gives you pause as far as, ooh.
Yeah, and okay. It was a home game. Yeah, it wasn't a good look early on.
It was a tough, it's a tough result. But yeah, it's another sort of, they had the pieces. They picked up different production from different players and won some games in different ways, especially later in the year. I think probably after another game that I went to, which they lost at Skenevis, 1-point game.
Yes.
Which, you know,
that was the turning point.
Yeah. I mean, that was probably from that point on is when things more or less started to click. Whether, you know, they their front court was different than 99.9% of Class D front courts in New York, where Daphne West and Morgan Huff and Mia Dubin, again, the production and the depth of it, they got, you know, we touched on this slightly in that short halftime discussion that we had during the Tri-Valley Championship game in February. The emergence and progression of Mackenzie McGovern, I thought, made a big difference for them in these sorts of games. You know, with you need guard depth. You need the ability to get some balance in production, not necessarily just from, you know, X amount of players, but it's not all paint points. It's not all post points. You know, you can knock down some jumpers. You can get some dribble penetration. You can get a mix of transition half-court offense. And you can handle the ball against pressure. And I thought, like, when I watched them early in the year, it was a little more, you know, we're putting all of this on Bryn Whiteman's shoulders.
Yes.
Here, take it all. You know, you want more? Here. You know, just as far as like guard responsibilities of getting him into offense, breaking pressure, being a floor spacer. I thought the progression of in the emergence, because at that point when they had that game with Edmondson Morris, if I'm wrong, Mackenzie McGovern was on JV.
Yeah, didn't have her. And by the end of the year, I mean, even at Hudson Valley, I mean, she had a nice afternoon there. Mm-hmm. So
Tri-Valley Championship, I didn't see them in the Section 4. She was very good in the Tri-Valley Championship.
Yes.
She got in the game and then she didn't leave the game.
Nope. They had to keep her in. She was great in the sectional tournament. She was great on Long Island, had 10 points down there. When Smithtown Christian was kind of starting to make everybody a little nervous, they were hitting some shots. They hit a bunch of threes and it was like, okay, this isn't out of reach. And she played really well. I think I wrote an article on my website, natelull.com. If you haven't checked it out, go read the article because it's about CVS and the turning point of their season and the balance that they have. And Coach Kelly Taggart said it was the Skenevis game. She called it wasn't a slow start, a sluggish start. And she kind of chuckled when I asked her that. Like, yeah, we knew it was a slow start. And we sat down after the Skenevis game and said, let's go over our goals again. Let's just kind of hit the reset button and let's focus on the little stuff and, you know, kind of all cliche stuff, but it really clicked with this group. And I think the best game that I saw them have was against Edmondson Morris in the league semifinals. They're the 4 seed. Edmondson Morris is the 1 seed. It's a weeknight game at Edmondson, which is a tough, tough place to play. The place is packed. It's loud. And CVS comes out with a 57-52 win. And they just had such good balance. They were running everything to perfection. They weren't phased. And that's when I was like, oh, here it is. Here it comes. And they were able to carry that through the rest of the way. But McGovern was a huge piece of that. Morgan Huff had a huge night that night. Mm-hmm. That's where it was the first time where I was like, I really, again, a betting thing, I couldn't bet who was going to be their high scorer from night to night. Mm-hmm. And it's not always the case in Class D.
Oh, for sure. For sure. That's, If you're able to get out and transition a little bit, then you're going to see Morgan Huff 22 points. If the court's open a little bit more because she's a good off ball mover, Daphne's a weird matchup for a lot of teams. Daphne West, just with the size, the frame, and the ability to face up, and she's mobile for her size and all that. Mia Dubin in the half court,
yeah,
able to pound opponents in the post. Yeah, they had different options, and they had those front court pieces, but those front court pieces weren't all the same kid.
Exactly.
You know, it wasn't all the same exact type of player. So you're able to play those three together, because if all three of those kids did the same thing, you can't play all three at the same time.
Right.
You know, different. It's different than playing three guards. But they all, you know, since they all are able to succeed and produce in different ways, and they kind of found that marriage, you're able to play all three at the same time, and now you have this nuclear size advantage.
I don't think I've really asked you about this, and correct me if I'm wrong, and I haven't really brought it up in general because, you know, this team went to the section, won the league, and won this, and went to the sectional final a year ago, lose a heartbreaker to Oxford by two. And I write about this in the article. Oxford goes to the state finals. They lose to Hammond. Okay, so now Joe is gone, goes to St. John Fisher. She's having all this success, co-rookie of the year for the Empire 8, first team all-conference, tons of awards, a D3 region award. So to me, I've had a tough time as a reporter this year focusing on, like, yes, Joe is off here doing all these things, but like I want to give this team its due too. They're here doing it without Joe, which is difficult to do. Do you feel like there was a transition period, even watching from afar, where it was like, okay, I don't know, this group figured it out? Like talking to Daphne as we got into the state tournament, she was like, we just had to prove to ourselves that we could win that game and kind of prove to everybody else too that we could win that sectional final. Like, do you feel like that all plays in there somehow?
There has to be.
Yeah.
To an extent. You know, I can't speak to the exact amount, but there has to be, because as you, Joe's not chopped liver.
Yeah. You can't ignore it, right?
That's a future All-American. You know, that's a future Division III All-American.
That's wild.
And
good job,
that,
Joe.
Yeah, good job, Joe. That graduating from a Class D school, even if you have depth, even if you have more size, even if you have pieces to, quote, replace, you know, coming directly behind with experience. Yeah, I mean, you lose Jolene Lusk. You got to figure out life after her.
And they did. It might have taken them a little while, but I think that's what I was impressed the most with, because when they started to have some hiccups, and I mean, folks, they finished, what, 20-4? Like, they didn't have that many hiccups. They were fine for a majority of the year. But when they had those kind of tough losses to Skenevis and to Edmiston Morris, it was kind of like, I don't know, like, how is this going to play out? It might have been easy to fold up and say, we don't have Joe anymore, and, you know, the thing that we always hear, like, oh, on to softball or whatever, and it's like, no, they figured it out.
It took them a while to win the tough game.
Yes.
You know, they won, you know, like four losses, but it took them a while to win the tough game. It took them a while to win the game that they didn't just physically overmatch their opponent.
Yes, very true.
And that's, you know, that Skenevis game, which that turned into the game that turned the corner. But, yeah, I mean, that's probably part of, even if you have a lot of pieces, when you graduate Joe, the puzzle is no longer complete. Now you have a new puzzle.
Brand new puzzle.
So you have a new puzzle. You still have those pieces, but now you got to make that new puzzle work.
And, I mean, they pretty much carried 7 to 8 players for a majority of the year. I mean, they finished the year with 8 players, and that's with having McKenzie up from JV, and they'd get a couple other nice pieces off the bench from some different players. I thought Aaron Williams was good at times, and it was just like...
Kaylee Barnes gave him something on Long Island.
Yeah, she had 11 points, and again, that game was never truly in doubt, but I'm like, boy, if Smithtown Christian keeps hitting these threes...
There was a while where it was just close enough for weird stuff to happen.
Yes. It was like that 10-point range.
Yeah. You feel like, all right, Cherry Valley's going to win this. It's just a matter of by how much. But there was a stretch where, again, like just close enough for just weird stuff to happen.
So, again, Cherry Valley, a fantastic run, but they run into now the 2-time defending state champ Hammond from Section 10, which is way up north. Throw a rock and you're in Canada North.
Yep, the depths of St. Lawrence County.
So, and I thought that, Jeff, you're the perfect person to pass along some information about Hammond. And we tried to talk about it on our radio broadcast, but I feel like we can get into it a little more in depth now. But, I mean, Hammond is a true Class D school. They don't graduate a ton.
It's as true a Class D school as your Delaware League school.
I was going to say, I compare it to a Delaware League school in terms of they're graduating 15.
Yeah.
And correct me if I'm wrong, their radio guy was saying they do grab one or two players from Morristown, which is like 5 miles over maybe.
Yeah, I mean, there's
occasionally if they...
Yeah, I mean, you have some... It's an entire section of the NateLull.com/WCDO coverage region.
I love that.
Where
I love
it. Your largest schools are Malone and Messina, which are A's in the entire section. And you've got four B's, four C's, and then the rest, a bunch of class D schools.
That's crazy.
And those, obviously to be a class D school, it's not like you're, we say big class D school, small class D school, even the biggest class D schools graduate at 40 kids.
Exactly.
But, that's a lot of, among those D's, you're talking, it's a lot of 15s and 20s. And, you're Morristown and like Clifton Fine used to have a girls team. I don't think they've had a girls team in 5 years at this point.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
The culture, and if anybody from Section 10 does latch onto this, which I assume that they will, social media is a small place.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't mean this in a negative way. Section 10's weird. It's different than anywhere else that I cover. So they do, I'll use this as a prime example. They're the only section in New York that does an overall championship.
Yeah, tell me about this. This is fascinating.
So they get their sectional playoffs done a week before everybody else.
Okay.
Because they'll do overall championships. They have four classes, A, B, C, D, because I don't have any double A's or triple A's or however many A's we feel like going to. And you throw those four teams in a pot. Semifinals, finals, it's a local bragging rights thing. It doesn't mean anything for after that week, but it's just, the local, who is our Section 10 champion? Who's the best team in Section 10? The Class D team wins a lot for the girls.
Wow.
And it's, think of, and this is nothing against Cherry Valley, but think about, Cherry Valley having to play Horseheads.
Exactly.
Or Johnson City or whatever it may be, and just kind of put that into some sort of context, that whether it's Hammond now or Hewelton years ago,
right?
It just as easily as it could have been Hammond, Herman DeKalb was pretty much just as good as them this year.
Yeah, that's
so
the thing.
You throw
folks,
Herman in there.
Yeah, you've been telling me all year that Section 10D had two or three teams that could win it all.
Mm-hmm.
Which is crazy.
Because Hammond is Hammond. They showed it in March. When you put, they were another team that kind of had to figure it out this year. They had a new puzzle. They had pieces, but they had a new puzzle. But it was the opposite of Cherry Valley. Cherry Valley lost the centerpiece and had to figure out how to make it work, whether it was a new centerpiece or whether we kill you by committee or whatever it may be. Hammond lost everybody around their centerpieces. And Ava Howie and Landry Kenyon. And they had to figure out how to make it work around those two with players that hadn't been there yet. At the end of the day, they had Ava Howie and Landry Kenyon. Ava Howie and Landry Kenyon are going to win you games in Class D in March without question.
Yeah, against.
And nothing against everybody, nothing against the, Addison Gravelines and
Mia
Tullys of the world, because they needed them. They didn't score, but they did some other things. They defended, all that. But you throw Ava and Landry on court, Class D basketball, I mean, those are two of the four. If you were to make a Class D statewide starting lineup, they're on it.
Yeah.
I don't have to think. I have to think about who the other three are. I just know that they're on it.
Yeah, I'm sure they're going to be first team locks. And
one of them will be player of the
year. One of them will be player of the year. And they had, Ava had 32 and Landry had 22 against Cherry Valley. And, Cherry Valley's pretty good defensive team. And Ava especially just had a phenomenal game.
Okay, Ava's, even if this wasn't Hammond, or even if this was Hammond's first go around, Ava's ready for that moment. She's played enough between the AAU stuff. She does my stuff, not shameless plug, I guess, but she's done a couple of my events in the last year, and between the North Country Crush, who Herman DeKalb's best player, Olivia Sims, or her dad coaches that North Country Crush group, which
oh okay
it's a lot of it's probably the first time that I can think of in my time doing this that there has been a team legitimately of the best players in Section 10 that go out and go to different, you know, whether it's Jim Rat around here or they went to Chicago last year, a couple of other places like that. I know they'll take on a pretty, you know, kind of exposure-based schedule this year. But they're seasoned. You know, this group of Section 10 kids is probably more seasoned than anybody up there that I can think of since the McCormick sisters. Because the McCormick sisters, Paige and Madison from Hewelton, been there, done that. You know, they did it all from a basketball standpoint. But you throw Ava in that picture, you know, the Hudson Valley court is in the state championship games, like, all right, you know, she looks at the other side where the other side looks at her and they have big eyes and say, Hammond, Ava, whatever. She looks at the other side and says, let's go.
Yeah.
You know, this is, I mean, it's state championship game, small town, obviously it means a lot to her, but you know, the level that she's seen, the experience that she's had, the things that she's seen, it doesn't compare.
Yeah.
So
it's another day in the office. Yeah.
Yeah. To an extent, you know, it's just there's levels to it.
Here's a question on that overall tournament, because mm-hmm. we were getting some information in preparation for the broadcast, and I'll pick your brain to see how true it is. And I would think too, like, all right, you've won your sectional tournament. You're waiting for states. Do you see a lot of teams? Two questions here. Do you see a lot of teams be like, we don't care about the overall because we don't want to get hurt. So we'll maybe play some of our bench, or is that really like that big of a thing that they want to go win it? And we had also heard that a D team had never won it before, but I had a hard time believing that because of thinking back about Hewelton and all these good teams.
I couldn't tell you for sure, but I do not believe that to be true.
Yeah, that's
you know, I would like, have to go back and look.
Right.
But I, you know, if I'm thinking specifically of the Hewelton teams, I know Canton had a couple of pretty good teams around that time, but
could have been bad info.
I
don't,
yeah, I'm not sure. I can't tell you that for sure one way or the other, but I would be quite surprised if a Class D team hadn't won that before. I know last year the B team won. I want to say Governor won, but it was, you know, they beat Hammond by two.
Right. Wow.
You know,
okay.
It was just a close game.
Even if they hadn't won, I'm sure the D's have always been competitive in that. If they weren't, for some reason, sitting everybody, but it's like if they sat everybody, what's the point of having it? I guess.
Right. Yeah. And the usual, I think, the usual format there is the A team plays the D team and the B team plays the C.
Jeez.
And it's pretty much, at least in my time, it's pretty much always the B against the D in the championship. Like the B beats the C, the D beats the A.
Okay.
Every year. So you have
what a different
Canton
world.
Against Hewelton or Governor against Hammond or, you know, if you look at Section 10 this year, if you were to say, all right, rank every team in order, you know, as far as who's the best teams, out of your top five, three of them are D's probably. Right. Yeah, between Hammond is Hammond, they squeaked by Herman in the championship. They got a way better game from Herman than they did from anybody else after that.
Wow.
Herman had a fourth quarter lead. And I know Hammond won by four, but I want to say they had a fourth quarter lead.
And to think that
Edwards Knox would have, and Herman beat him in the regular season. So and Hammond was playing better in February and, you know, late February when they had the sectional run, because that's what winning teams do. They play their best basketball late in the year. But, you know, Edwards Knox was the same sort of, like, Edwards Knox reminded me of, and this is not a knock, this is just, you know, what the level is right now. EK was like a little bit better version of Edmiston Morris.
Okay.
They lost in the semis to Herman. But that was similar team makeup as Edmiston Morris. A little bit better, a little bit deeper as far as what they brought to the table. So, yeah, it's all cyclical. Like, we can go another couple years and, Yeah, I know I had some people from Section 10 on me on Twitter about we should have multiple state representatives. Like, well, yeah, Herman might be about the second best team in the state this year, but 2 years ago, Copenhagen won the state title, beat the Section 10 team to get there.
Right.
Like, you know, so it's all cyclical, but Section 10 Class D basketball is very, very good right now. And next year, not quite the same, but Ava Howie's still there.
Right.
Edwards Knox is going to be legit next year. Just okay. As long as they here right now, put it down March, whatever. As long as they don't get hurt, they don't have injuries between Addie Foster and Cameron Huckle and so on. Like that guard play is going to be tough.
They're always good.
Shattagay's guard play is tough next year. Lisbon's got, which is another D, home of Rick Carlisle, Lisbon, New York.
Yeah.
I always have to say that every time I talk about Lisbon, but another Class D school, they have maybe the best returning scorer, like the most fluid returning scorer in Section 10. So, you know, there's a lot of future college basketball players in the Class D level.
And since I've been doing this, there's almost always been a very good Section 10 team somewhere in the mix, you know, in the Final Four, in the championship game, or winning it. And I always love it because you have such a good eye on it. It allows me to keep up with it. And it's like, okay, who are we going to run into eventually? Because we've had some good luck getting teams out of here to get to the Final Four. But
best areas for Class D basketball from... You know, there's pockets like Copenhagen a couple of years ago, and Lafargeville is going to be very good next year. They should be very good next year. Northville's obviously made that run this year, and they'll be back
next year. They were tough.
But from consistency, from level of play, and from depth, the two best areas for Class D basketball in New York are Section 10 and the NateLaw.com/WCDO coverage reach between the... You know, whether it's the Delaware League, you know, years ago it was the Delaware League teams that were kind of towards the top. And then Tri-Valley has shown a little bit, you know, they've been on the higher end of that over the last two or three years. But, you know, those are probably the two areas as far as Class D basketball that Titletown, to me, you know, whether it gets there or not, that's where the most talent, the most depth, the most consistency lies.
We certainly have consistency of getting there. We do have a tough time winning it. You know, SK's come close and Oxford's come close. Delhi is kind of our crown jewel, at least in terms of D, in the magical run that they have. And it's hard to believe it was that long ago already. always love talking with Coach Bruce about that. But
have not moved from that spot at Hudson Valley since.
That's so, yeah, you were saying that you like to sit right on that baseline now.
Yeah, hey, that's, if you've seen me at these games, I always kind of do the same thing. I'm standing and rotating side to side on the baseline, opposite the baseline official. Just get out of the way, you know, all that good stuff. Hudson, and generally standing, you know, it's not often that I'm sitting down during games. Hudson Valley, I will park my butt on the same side, on the far baseline, opposite table side, and just rock there the entire time. And the amount, what's so cool about that, when you think about it and you let it sink in, you get, you know, probably too emotional for it, is the amount of lifetime memories that I've seen from that one spot that, you know, and it's not diminishing it for me, but it's, you know, just, you know, something that sticks in the Delhi girls basketball program's mind, Logan Bruce's mind, Todd Bruce's mind, so on and so forth, of that shot against Franklinville. And fast forward 6 years, and I saw another left, you know, that was more of like a left wing three. But Hilton Averill Park this year, the Graziano kid gets a kick out from Mallory Heiss, bangs a left corner three at the buzzer in overtime to beat the home team. Averill Park had, you know, close to, you know, 2,000 people in there for them. You know, things that'll stick in the it'll stick in my mind for, you know, forever too. I still remember the Logan Bruce shot like it was maybe not yesterday, but last week. And the amount of moments that I've seen from that one spot, from that one little area that will hold on as girls become women, you know, as they become adults,
yeah,
as coaches and so on and so forth. It's pretty cool.
It is cool. It's one of my favorite parts of the job. Sometimes you get so lost in the stats and the this and the that, and it's like those moments are what keeps you coming back. At least for me, it's like you see a moment like that in front of a packed house, and it's like such a weird thing. It's a life-changing moment that people will talk about for the next 10, 20, 30 years, and you're like, I'm here right now, and it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of freaky in a way. So
it's Tim Lindner, who is my go-to guy as far as the scholastic stuff in Western New York, Buffalo, Section 6, and Monsignor Martin. He always goes to Hudson Valley every single year just to watch. You don't know that he's there unless you know who he is. He's not in media row. He's not on the base. He's sitting in the stands just like a fan, and just sits there every year and watches it all front to back. And he had tweeted after the Hilton Naval Park game about, and I'll paraphrase and shorten it, this is why I do this.
Yes. Yes. And
this is what brings me here. And yeah, I mean, it's a high that you never stop chasing, I think, when you're in this.
I agree.
And when that once in a great while, when you get it, it's worth however long it took.
Yeah, you forget about all the lame nights, quote unquote. And there's really never a lame night, but you know, those nights where you were like, yeah, you know, just an average night, you get one of the big ones and it's like, oh yeah, okay.
And yes, there are the occasional lame nights.
Yeah, there are.
you can go down that road. I'll take the other side of the fork.
My favorite is when you get the text of like, oh, you had a good one tonight, huh? And you're like, yeah, maybe I didn't make the right choice tonight.
mm-hmm. But before or after the expletive-laced rant?
Yeah, yeah. All right, so we'll let you go here, but you're headed down to Stars and Stripes tonight, which is exciting because I think there was a five-year layoff. Is that right? It's basically a Section 4.
2019, I think, was the last one.
Yeah.
Because obviously it didn't happen in 2020.
Nope.
And then
it's had some time off.
21, there was nothing. 22 and 23, there was the B Canny All-Star game, which I think really only came about after we bellyached about it enough.
Yep.
We're texting back and forth. Hey, is Stars and Stripes ever going to happen again?
And for anyone who doesn't know, Stars and Stripes is just like a Section 4 All-Star tournament for boys and girls.
Very unique to Section 4, something I wish that I got to see in other areas.
And so last year they did the one at Elmira College. Where was it 2 years ago?
Main Endwell.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Same. They had the,
yes.
It was the, not quite the Stars and Stripes format, which I'm not complaining about.
No.
It was
just one night.
And this is nothing against the seniors, but what I appreciate, what this is different than most other places, it's a true area all-star game. Everywhere has senior games, which is great. And again, I'm not trying to take anything away from that. Like, I still, you know, had a senior game when I played in high school and
right.
all that. But it's there's something different about, oh, it's a true area all-star game. You have quote, maybe they're not batting 1,000 as far as getting all of the best players in Section 4.
Right.
But it's a pretty solid representation of the best players in Section 4, senior, junior, sophomore, freshman. And that's where I came from earlier this week in Buffalo. The Best of Buffalo Showcase, where those guys, Rod Middleton and Josh Coaster, they put that event together. I think they started on the boys' side in the last 3 years. They've done something on the girls' end where it's, you know, a lot of the best players in the 716 area code. They do it a little different. They have a junior senior game and they have an underclassman game
This
is a little bit more of a mix. You could say more regionally based, where you've got the team that's Western you know, Stack West sort of group with Elmira and Corning and Horseheads and whatnot. And I think you've got the Norwich kids and
you kind of the others. The Mac and Norwich and Oneana together.
Yeah.
And I do think I have heard some chatter this week about, you know, certain kids not being selected. I don't 100% know how they do it. I do think that there are some scenarios where they've reached out and a kid said, no, I can't. I'm busy. I have softball or track or whatever. And I do think there's the occasions where someone didn't get invited. I don't think there's any ill will because of it, but I don't know if it's a numbers thing. But yeah, I agree. There's some kids missing that you'd love to see in there. But I'm just so glad that they brought it back in general. And there's been so much buzz about it this week. And it's been on TV news. It's been all over social media. They've done a really good job of kind of promoting it, and I'm happy to see it back.
Yeah, it's good. It's good to have it back. And I think it was, I'm sorry if I'm putting words into his mouth, but I'm almost 100% sure this is a conversation I had with Andy Scott, great Horseheads coach.
Yes.
A couple of years ago, because he was one that really spearheaded making sure that the Buchanan All-Star Game happened in lieu of the in lieu of Stars and Stripes. But I know we had talked about it because we had had the conversations about Stars and Stripes are going to happen. Have you heard anything? It's always have you heard anything about this? And I know that Andy was in with all that, so I had checked in with him, and I remember him saying something along the lines of, when the go-getters decide to stop go-getting, who's next in line, pretty much. And it's taken a couple of years, but it's good to see that, whether it's the board of officials or, you know, others that are involved with it, it's good to see it back, because it's something that is, it's uniquely Section 4. You know, I think of it as just it's a small piece, right? It's just a couple of days, but it's kind of a stamp of the basketball culture in the Southern Tier, especially in the Binghamton area, I know. But, it's kind of a stamp of the basketball culture. And, yeah, I mean, it's a good stamp.
Yes.
You know, it's something, it's not a stamp of something that I could just kind of throw in the trash and do without.
Yes.
You know, it's something that I think is a good thing. It's a unique thing in a positive way. And
I know it is the board of officials that put it together. And I know in the past, and I'll throw this out there for anyone who's listening who might be like, I wish they had talked to this kid or that kid. If you want, feel free to reach out to me, because I know that in the past we have been able to get some names on the table from the C's and the D's to make sure that they don't get overlooked. And I'm more than willing to do that. For me, it's sending an email, it's making a phone call, and then it gets passed along to wherever it needs to. I'm always up to do that. You guys know that. It's what I'm here for. So in the future, if we can remember it, and a lot of Stars and Stripes is, oh yeah, that's next week, isn't it? So by then, sometimes it's too late. But if you're thinking about it, I have seen that really work proactively in the past, where we were able to get a kid in and they got to play, which was awesome.
Nate's the plug.
So yeah,
is basically what he's saying. He doesn't mean to be the plug, but he is the plug at the same time.
And in the past, all it was for me was connecting an AD and whoever I know, and they did the rest. But that was really fun. And I specifically think back to like the small school, like a Jordan Beer is going down there to play, or some of the other kids that I think some of the SK kids. I remember Bree Lang going down and Tori and some of those girls. And it was like, all we had to do was really just make sure we got the name on the right radar. And they were like, oh yeah, for sure.
Come down. There was a group there for a couple of years that was a lot of, I don't want to say a lot from this area, but
yeah,
several. You know, there were the SK. There was, I know Logan went there.
Yes,
we just talked about Logan Bruce. I know she was there. I know Bainbridge is a little bit closer to Binghamton than say some of those Delaware League areas, but you know, Abby Selfridge and
yeah, they all got
so
to go.
So I think did Coach Conway coach the team?
He did, right? And I don't think he is this year, but for many years when it was at Davis College, he coached a team. And it's, I mean, it's kind of a big commitment. You do two nights of boys, two nights of girls. Mm-hmm. It's a full week, essentially, of games. And that's why it's exciting to see it back, because it is a big thing. And it's at Union Endicott this year. Kudos to them for hosting. And
yes.
Hope you enjoy it tonight.
I hope so, too.
So it'll be good.
I figured championship night, even though, yeah, I get the Stars and Stripes championship is not quite the same as a state championship or a sectional championship, but when you put competitors on the court and you throw the word championship there,
yeah,
you play for peanuts. You know, if you're a competitor, you're a competitor. We talk about somebody that you've grown very familiar with in the more recent past, and something like Katie Lamoureux.
Oh, yeah.
Just say, I don't know, say any word that has anything to do with competition.
She's
and
there.
She's like, all right, who's the best player here?
Yeah.
All right, let me deal with her real quick. When you get competitors on the court and you throw that word championship, play for a t-shirt, doesn't matter. They'll get after it. So
I believe it was Katie in that game last year at Elmira College had like 30-something points and would not lose that game. And it was a throwaway, you know, not a throwaway game, but just a fun game.
They down a good amount at halftime, and then you blinked, and it's like, oh, she had 19 in the third quarter. Yeah. Okay.
She just wouldn't go down. So
yeah, it's just, it's Katie.
So Katie's an Emmy alum, and in case, I don't know when I will get this episode out, hopefully in a few days, but she's having a tremendous year with the Fairfield women's team playing Division I. They're in the national tournament. They're what, 31-1, something ridiculous.
They haven't Indiana. Lost since the second game of the year.
They played Vandy, right?
They played at Vandy, true road game, lost by two.
So they are the 13 seed. They get 4-seeded Indiana. So if maybe look up, see how they did if you are just checking in. Maybe they're still playing. How cool would that be? Because I'm thinking, this would be crazy, but they win two games there in Albany for the regional, and
yeah,
that would be fun. I probably think that'd be very tough to do, but that'd be kind of cool.
Never underestimate a team that's used to winning.
And
you develop those sorts of winning habits. You know, they've been, I get that the MAC is not the Big Ten or the ACC or so on and so forth, but hey, there's a reason why they've been able to run through their schedule. I mean, they beat Big East teams in the non-conference schedule, ran through the MAC because they have that level of player that can run with, you know, they can run with a 3-seed, a 4-seed, a 5-seed, and you develop those sorts of winning habits. They've played close games. They've been pushed, and they've figured out ways to win. They have players that figure out, you know, that don't roll over.
Yeah,
and yeah, I mean, it's. I hope, you know, for their sake, I hope, you know, this is a moment that how we talked about players in moments. You know, when you. You know, whether it's the micro scale of playing at Hudson Valley or the grand scale of the Division I women's basketball tournament. But yeah, I mean, it's a group of kids, a group of players, Lamoureux and Meg Anderson has had a better, who, by the way, is a New York, she's a Long Islander, somebody that I had the pleasure to watch a lot through her high school years on the AAU circuit with Long Island Lightning. They did a lot of the Long Island Lightnings in the hoop group circuit. So they played in a lot of the tournaments that even a couple of kids from your area went up against her a lot in high school. Like Madeline Barrows, she was playing with Syracuse Royals, they probably bumped up against the Lightning 5 times. And
wow. Yeah, she's been excellent.
Anderson's had as good a freshman year as maybe a better freshman year than just about everybody in the country.
Yeah, I mean, she's Rookie of the Week a million times, I think, was maybe the Conference Rookie of the Year, something like that.
I would hope so, because she was Rookie of the Week just about every single week. And win Rookie of the Week 14 times. I hope you're the Conference for Rookie of the Year. You versus Juju Watkins for the National Rookie of the Year, pretty much. I think she's on the mid-major Player of the Year watch list of any class.
She's been awesome. I haven't caught a Fairfield game. I had a few where I thought, okay, maybe I could get there. It didn't work out. So I know tickets in Albany would be like impossible to get, especially since Iowa's creeping around there.
So, everybody's going to be there.
Yeah.
As long, you know, depending on upsets versus no upsets. But yeah, the prices for...
I've already heard they're insane.
$300 for a nosebleed?
Yeah.
I mean, that's... Hey, women's basketball, man.
That's cool. It's very cool.
Don't tell me people don't care about women's basketball.
And I believe I will have Katie on sometime this spring when she's home and gets settled after the whole season is done. And I will have to ask her how playing in the NCAA Division I women's national tournament compares to playing with the Armadillos at the Norwich YMCA. I mean, that has to be right on par, right?
So, oh, my God.
She was awesome with us last year and was so good to our younger kids. And even, you know, we went up to Utica and Albany and she came to all those, but she took time out of her day to come up to a tournament in Norwich that was just one day for fun. We got a couple games in. She would not take no for an answer and just came up and was really good about helping the younger kids get involved in playing. And so she's awesome. So hope to have her on soon and I hope they have a nice long run ahead of them here.
Yeah. But she's great.
She's great.
Won't hear me say anything bad about her.
All right, last question. We always ask favorite local place to eat. When you're cruising through today, where are you stopping? Did you stop somewhere already?
Oh, boy. I have not stopped anywhere
today.
I was thinking...
Is there a Bing stop that you like?
The thought in my head, I'm looking at the clock as we speak. As we sit in this studio, it's about 2.5 hours from start time at UE. So I will probably go to Strange Brew in downtown Binghamton, right by the arena.
Yep.
Get a coffee, a little something to eat, do the games, Friday night, Union Endicott.
Late night.
It's right by Lupo's. So I'll probably get a speedy at Lupo's for the way back. Unless I haven't looked at hours, but late night, Oneana Friday. I know that pizza's always on the docket with Tino's on a Friday night if I'm, you know, just swim through the inebriated 18 to 23-year-olds. But I think Big Al's might be open late now, or is it?
I would have to check the hours, but I think so.
I think that they do late night hours when college is in session on the Fridays. So, you know, if I feel like going down the barbecue road, just off Main Street, do a little Big Al's barbecue, I could do that.
All good. These are really good choices.
Options. Diversify my bonds.
We're on some kind of a record here for Tino's mentioned like in consecutive podcasts. I think.
Really?
Yeah. Like, and it might be because I don't always release the episode in order per se, but I would say out of the last five episodes, we got to have four Tino's mentions at least. Geez. So, but it's classic.
It fits a clientele.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to be that clientele forever.
Me too. Me too. You can't pass it up. But well, hey, Jeff, thank you for coming in. Real quick, for anyone who's new, best place to find your stuff?
Social media. If you type in Empire State Takeover on anything, it'll pop up on X, the artist formerly known as Twitter. It's NYS Takeover. Any other social platform, it's Empire State Takeover. But again, if you just type in Empire State Takeover, it'll pop up everywhere. Website, EmpireStateTakeover.com. There's the writing aspect. You know, over the last couple of years, I've done the subscriber, I call it the subscriber content, kind of premium content with the writing, and that's a place where I dump the photos as well. That'll also be where you see information for showcases. So people see me with the camera on the baseline, and the question that I get more than any other one that this point in my life is, hey, you got any picks? You get any good picks? And, you know, maybe I did, maybe I didn't. And I appreciate, you know, that's I guess you would call it the media arm that has developed. But the root of all the EST stuff is the exposure aspect, you know, exposure to colleges, the player evaluation, and being, I don't have any other term to call it, but being the Carfax of college coach calls, you know, whether it's AAU coach or trainer or high school coach or whatever is, you know, marketing a player to a college coach, and a college coach can text me or call me and say, all right, this is what I heard. What you got for me?
Yeah.
And it happens, you know, my phone's or my watch, whatever, has probably vibrated about 5 times since I sat down because we're getting to that point where it's a little bit heavier. Right at the back end of high school season, AAU is kicking up. The evaluation period is in 4 weeks.
Yep.
So
portal's open.
Portal. Oh my God, I've got more portal questions the last 2 weeks.
I bet.
From all, you know, all levels, from Division One to Division One to Division Threes to Division, you know, Division Twos live on the portal. A lot of them live on the portal. So yeah, I mean, it's and that's a different, that's another podcast. You could do the portal podcast.
I was gonna say we should maybe do next time you're here a portal podcast, because I think by then we'll have some answers that we can't reveal now. Mm-hmm. So yeah, maybe we should plan to do that late spring, early summer.
Yeah, that should be the next showcase I do. The amount of the level of talent that I would have at EST portal showcase.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. But
that'd be wild.
But yeah, I mean, that's kind of the root of where all of this stuff started. And I'm sorry, I'm going a little bit long here on
this.
No,
you're good.
But I'm just thinking about this. You know, it's nice when worlds kind of collide, where we, at the beginning, we talked about the Buffalo thing and the trip. And at the end, I get to bring up Buffalo again.
Yeah.
A few that listen to this may remember that I started off doing boys stuff too. And I had some local representation with Tyler Lamport, South Courtright, Colby Fancher from Stamford, the Lawrence kids.
Yeah, Mason
Jared
Weir.
Jared Benjamin,
yeah.
Mason Weir, Albert Odero.
Yeah, Odero, our guy.
So I go out to Buffalo for the Best of Buffalo showcase, and the first thing I hear as I'm walking in to the facility is, where's my MVP trophy? I turn around, and guy by the name of Andrew Sisko sitting in his truck. Andrew was the MVP of the first boys league that I ever had. He was on a team that also had Tyler Lamport and Colby Fancher.
Wow.
Turned into a near 3,000 point, 1,500 rebound player at Damon. Was the best player to ever put on a Damon uniform. Not only is he the all-time leading scorer at Damon, he is the all-time leading scorer of any men's basketball player that has played in a college in the state of New York.
My God.
With just under 2,900 points. So, yeah, he's D2 National Player of the Year. He's pretty much, you want the list of accolades, it, as long as his 6'9" frame.
Yeah.
You know, it's the first person I saw. So it was a cool kind of full circle moment. He was there officiating. So he lives out there now, and he's married and all that. And he's got, and he's staying in the game as an official. So he was officiating that. It's the first person I saw. It was kind of a cool full circle moment with a lot of the girls and the families that I've know out there. It's like, that was my first year.
That's the first year.
That's blowing the whistle now. That was, you know, in local, level of local tie. He played with Ty, played with Colby in that summer league.
I see Colby all the time. I got to get him in here. He's coaching. I'll have to ask him about that.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
But yeah, that's kind of the root of all of it. It's been, this is the 10th year with girls, and it's the 8th year just with girls. But yeah, that's kind of the root of everything, where it all started, the exposure, the showcases, the, you know, be that voice for the college coaches that can be relatively reliable and consistent and has the eyes on the players and kind of knows what they're looking for, understands their system, so on and so forth. And high school season's over, which means along with AAU season, it means showcase season. So my first one is, shameless plug, April 26th out in Rochester, in the Rochester area at St. John Fisher. That's a Friday night. It'll go from 6:30 to 9 o'clock. That's for high school players. I'll also have a high school showcase in Albany later on in June. I haven't put the information up on the website yet, but that'll be up in the next couple weeks on EmpireStateTakeover.com. Also, I have a middle school. I refuse to call the middle school events showcases because then that makes you think the college coaches are going to be there. That's not the case. You know, it's for a different sort of experience for a middle school player. Also, litmus test, a barometer to see where they stand at this point, and also an opportunity for me to get eyes on them at a younger age so I can see how they develop over time and I can put them in different sorts of situations, see different sorts of matchups. And
I love that.
You know, all that sort of stuff to start to develop relationships and all that. I'll have a middle school combine in May, probably mid-May. All my spring stuff is Friday nights. So, yeah, that's along with the social media, Empire State Takeover on everything, EmpireStateTakeover.com. The event information, the Rochester one registration is going to be open in hours, probably in the next couple days. And middle school and high school Albany will be in coming weeks as far as when registration opens up.
Yeah, if you get stuck, reach out to me and I can connect you with Jeff and help you get signed up. So great events, and thanks for doing all that, man. It's good stuff. Yeah. Good stuff.
Happy to be around.
Yeah. All right, we'll do it again soon. We'll have to do the we had to write this down. The Portal Podcast. We'll see if we can pull that off. So check back in the archives. I think Jeff now continues his streak of being the guest we've had on most. Is this four or five?
Yeah, it's five at least.
It's got to be five. So
one for the thumb.
Yeah, he's right up there. So no one is even close, I think. We've had a couple twos and threes. Yeah, you're at four or five range. So
he doesn't tell you. I camp outside of CDO in Sydney like it's Krzyzewskiville. I need to hold that crown.
I kick him. I say, hey, you want to come up today? You want to do a podcast? What are you doing?
Yeah, let me shower real quick. Yeah. If you have any bottles of water, I can just dump on me. I'll be in there.
Fun fact, CDO does have a shower.
Yes. Yeah. I get a mute. Every time I walk into your restroom, your facilities, I look over, I get amused by it. I'm like, yeah, you know, I never know when you're going to get snowed in.
Yeah. CDO.
Radio's got a radio.
CDO was a apartment before it became a radio station. And so our bathroom has a shower and people always like asking about it. So
yeah. Have I asked about it before?
I don't know
Have I just looked at it and kind of chuckled and kept it moving?
I think you've kept it moving, but someone came up the other day and was just fascinated. Somebody won tickets or something and they went to the restroom and when they came out, they're like, do you have a shower? Do you guys need that? It's like, no, but hey, you never know.
Never know if you're good. I mean, I didn't realize that this would make sense looking at it, but I didn't think about the fact that this was an apartment pre-CDO, but
CDO came in 82, so they turned an old apartment building into, as we look around, if you've ever been in our studio, beautiful shag carpets from 1982. So, old apartment, and they've kind of worked on it over the years, but yeah.
I've always just looked at it as radio's got a radio, and you never know when something happens.
Yep.
And somebody's stuck here for 24 hours.
It had not been used in a long time, and I have brought it back. I have used it a few times in the last few years.
I figured you were going to go down that road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I went for a run or something, or I was coming from somewhere else. And, you know, when we're traveling like we do, this is like my truck stop here. I shower one is open. Like, so I'm like, all right. So I've brought it back and, it's a unique thing, but hey,
it's named after you now. Yeah. I think I saw the plate.
CDO is not your normal place to work. And that just adds to it. So for sure.
Makes it what it is.
It is. It's small town,
live local radio at its finest, and that just adds to the legend. So
I always enjoy looking at the the little plaques and photos of I think it's always the same, but I think I look at it every time I come in.
Yeah, there's all sorts of stuff. I mean,
Tim Russert in the picture.
Yeah, the guys who have worked here have won a lot of different awards and done a lot of community service, so the plaque wall here is pretty cool, and it'll be sad someday when this is all gone. Knock on wood, hopefully. It's not, but these guys are good stuff. They let me do this, and I appreciate that. So, all right, man, safe travels. We'll talk to you soon.
Yes.
All right.
Thank you very much.
That's going to wrap up the girls' basketball wrap-up here on the Nate Lull Podcast. Jeff Maliner back again. Check out his stuff, and we'll see you again soon on the Nate Lull Podcast.
You've been listening to the Nate Lull Podcast. Download each new episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.